Halflings, it has finally happened. We have merch!
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
The crowd does indeed go wild. We have been working very hard behind the scenes to make some excellent merch for you all, which is available to pre-order right now. Some of them will be available from the 3rd of October and the others from the 1st of November. We wanted to do this in time for the holidays so that if you know someone who maybe enjoys a bit of Three Black Halflings, you can get them a Christmas present or indeed for yourself. It's also a fantastic way to support the show. You basically have like a Unati pack, by the way, a Unati stickers pack.
It's true.
Pretty awesome. Unati stickers pack. I like this.
It's called the Suffer and Learn sticker pack, but originally it was called the Unati sticker pack.
Okay, good. I'm happy with the Suffer and Learn.
We liked it because it's like, then it's quotes.
Instead of just pictures of Unati's face.
Several different expressions.
Yeah. It's weird because this is not a video show. You know what it is? It's visualizations of the audio track. Oh, like Unati's audio tracks from some of her finest episodes.
Yeah. It's just the blocked out lines where she's peaked her microphone from laughing.
Exactly.
So the merch that we have available, we have a yellow collage hoodie, which has a mixture of designs and phrases from the show. The Three Black Halflings t-shirt, which has got an amazing design and the words Three Black Halflings. It looks so nice. I'm very happy with that one. Then we have the Outlaws and Obelisks poster. You can order a physical poster. A beautiful, gorgeous poster of Outlaws and Obelisks. Then we have a pin and then two whole sticker packs.
I have a question.
Yes.
Does this pin definitively answer the question of the official abbreviation for Three Black Halflings?
I think it does.
We've been saying TBH. Should we start selling swatches? We have to tell about the deal with Swatch. The Three Black Halflings Swatch Watch.
But, you know, this is one of those things that has evolved over time. We're forming our brand identity, and I think 3BH is just a little bit better.
We have officially become a corporation.
We are a huge corporation with Jamal at the top.
Jamal is pleased.
First critical role, then us.
There is also a tip jar on the store. If you would like to, you can give us a tip, and some of the proceeds will go to the amazing Jonathan Charles, who made the music for Outlaws and Obelisks. As when you donate to the tip jar at any level, you will be able to download the music that Jonathan has made for Outlaws and Obelisks, and it is absolutely incredible. Like, you will want to listen to this without us all talking over the top of it because it's so so good.
I listen to it for fun.
Yes.
Like, when I'm on planes and stuff, I'll just play the songs over and over again on a
because they're so good.
This is a true fact. Because they're real good.
They're really good.
Excellent tunage.
And some of the stickers I'm very, very proud of. I really think they look so badass, and I can't wait to slap them all over my office.
I love the Poochie Rat Bag sticker that is extremely late 90s.
Yes, it really is.
It is extremely late 90s.
Make sure you head over to store.dftba.com/collections/3blackhalflings. And if you would like to get yourself a discount, you can get 10% off if you are a patron on any tier. That is patreon.com/TBHalflings.
Woohoo!
Head over to all of our social medias. It will be plastered all over our social medias for a long, long, long time, I'm sure. But please support the show, buy some merch. It means a lot to us. And it would be really, really, really fucking cool to see some people, take some pictures in some Three Black Halflings merch. I'm so goddamn excited. Well, let's get into this week's episode.
This is a HeadGum Podcast.
Hello, Halflings! It's me, Jasper William Cartwright.
In the middle of a word.
Today by...
Jeremy Cobb. But Mark Humes calls me the ultimate space unwanker.
Wow, what a name.
Oh my god!
This is the wrong dungeon and the wrong dragon.
Full Prince vibe? Woo!
This makes them even more black!
Cake glitches and pitches.
Lands in the cusp of a teaspoon.
Oh, no!
On a nat 20.
No!
You think this is just a game?
That's disgusting and I love it.
Yeah. We're about to get into something real big now. Hey, we'll let you establish what that might be. And you know what's actually even funnier is I think this will be coming out before the interview with Mark Holmes. So even funnier that there is zero context for what has just been said. And I'm happy about that. I'm very pleased about this fact.
Oh, man. Yeah, because I think this was changed also. It was originally going to be the ultimate space wanker. But he was like, I don't want it to make it sound like I'm calling you a wanker. So it's going to be the ultimate space unwanker.
But I'm going to cut out the context you just gave because I think it's funnier if we don't have any context.
All right. I think I'll ask then. Jasper and Emma, just real quick, how does one, I just want to spitballing, how does one unwank
do you know
something?
What? That's a topic which I'm not willing to get into right now. But one thing that I am willing to get into is clerics with our special guest this week, Emma Carlson. How are you doing? Welcome back to the show.
Thank you so much. I'm so happy to be here. And I was saying to Jeremy before we started recording, it is my goal to convince everybody that clerics are the best class in D&D. And if I don't, I haven't done my job right.
Ooh,
so I'm very excited.
Okay, the gauntlet has been thrown down. I will be completely honest with you, Emma. Cleric has been, I got to play like a level one cleric once, and it was fun, but it has been on my radar as like the second choice for like my next character for like a long time. So I'm very primed to be convinced to bump it up to first. You know what I mean? For it to be my next
Absolutely.
Big character that I make.
Well, I tote myself as a cleric main. I will play a cleric anytime I can. I'm ready to convince you.
I mean, you've got enough subclasses to do that and never play the same cleric twice. Like, you,
yes.
So
exactly.
Many subclasses. It's truly wild.
Yeah.
So exciting.
Yeah. Yeah, you thought the wizard had
just
a bunch.
Wait.
The bonus episode on Patreon for this is going to be long.
Very long.
I think it took us like 2 hours to get through Barbarian. Like, God knows what this is going to take.
Oh my gosh.
I think it's worth saying up top that the reason for all of these subclasses is because going into 5th edition and then just throughout 5th edition, wizards knew that cleric
but
had
the
reputation
the
as the healing. Yeah, it's just the healing class. That's all you do. And so they were like, well, you can heal, but you don't have to heal. You can do all these other stuff too. You can shoot fire and you can raise people from the dead. And you can be like a baby wizard or a baby druid. You could
we came up with a phrase on Chatwater, which is our talk show that we have on side of our main campaign on Blackwater D&D, there's when you have narrative and mechanics and they kiss together. That's like that's like when you get the best things in D&D, when the narrative and mechanics just start smooching. I am fully convinced that cleric is the ultimate like
smoochies.
Narrative and mechanics smoochies class.
It's the ultimate smoochie class.
Because you have the amazing versatility of the mechanics where you're like, you can play a melee focused character or a spell focused character. You can be ranged or up close. You can wear armor, wield weapons. You can do healing and buffs as well as debuffs and damage. And then you've got the beauty of the role play. It's just
and I'll say like, because my top line thought on this is it gives you the option to play with a deity or divine connection in a it gives you the option to play in a non-toxic way because I think a lot of the other classes like warlock is very unhealthy, paladin
so unhappy.
Definitely can be unhealthy because it's a little too far the other way from warlock. Do you know?
The stereotypical paladin is not a great example.
So I really like the idea of having like quite a genuinely wholesome connection to a deity who doesn't have, you know, world conquering MOs. They might do, but I think you have the option at least to not have to deal with that.
Totally.
You know?
The really cool thing about clerics that I love is right off the top, when you have a cleric coming in and with that role play and stuff, you've already got stakes. Your character is tied to something bigger than themselves. themselves, whether that's for better or for worse. And that relationship is changed, like, based on how they interact with their god, or as well as who the god is and how close the gods are to the world that you play in. It makes for, like, a really amazing primary class, but also, narratively, you could pick up a cleric multi-class midway through the game exceedingly narratively, like, if your character finds a religion. Like, that's what happened in Blackwater. We have a two cleric party. I've been a cleric since the beginning, but we have an Eldritch Knight fighter, Kokanee, who, you know, Matt as a player was like wanting to multi-class. He was like, you know, I built this character for a one shot that has now turned into a campaign. So I would like a little bit more than what I've got.
I want a little bit of tools to play with here because I thought we were doing this.
He's
for
got
a
like
minute.
An 8 strength and like and like a 9 intelligence. So he's like, I got to get something else here. So he decided he wanted a bit more like mechanically and narratively to play with. And cleric was one of the options he was going to multi-class with. So we talked to Tim, our DM, about like what gods he could follow. Tim pitched a god being Arathis, the goddess of technology and kind of like innovation and creation. And basically was Matt was like, yeah, cool, that sounds great. And then Tim was like, I got it from here. So basically like weaved this beautiful story about how Arathis had been lost to time, and we like met the like last high priestess of Arathis. She like, you know, Kokanee would like became the like the new high priest and like started to take, and he was like the only follower of the religion. And then it gave Kokanee this like amazing story of like he has to find himself through his faith and like learning about his religion and learning about himself. And when he got to level 3, he took War Cleric because it gave him a bonus attack action. Again, the mechanics the narrative's kissing, which allowed him the versatility to like keep all the things he liked about the fighter, but then also not have to keep going down a narrative path that didn't make sense anymore. So now he's just going forward with Cleric, which is a beautiful, beautiful thing.
I think you definitely hit the nail on the head in that the narrative side of clerics, I think, is super fun. I think it's the reason why a lot of people are drawn to warlocks in the first place. I think it just drops you into a world where you have, like you said, like you have so many you have so much in terms of stakes. And I'm glad that you're making the case that maybe you don't have to take a level of warlock mid game if you want a satisfying narrative.
Absolutely.
And I think Jeremy, sorry, you can't. You go.
Oh, I was going to say, I think it's also worth examining, because there really are a lot of similarities narratively and mechanically in terms of the synergy between the narratives and the narrative and the mechanics with both warlocks and clerics. And it seems like the reason that a lot of people will often prefer to go warlock over cleric is because they're like, I want the dark side. I want to feel, you know, I want a serious thing. And it's like, oh, I have a relationship with this person. Whereas I think a lot of people, when they think of being a cleric, they explicitly tie it to a religion. And I think, first of all, it is fine if you just don't want to be a religious character. Totally. That's absolutely fine. But I think a lot of people are coming from a very limited understanding of how religion can function. And also how a person, how a person's relationship to their deity or ideals
can function. Just really quickly, I wonder whether it's partly to do with whether it's like organized religion versus faith as well. Because I think that's like a big difference in terms of, like, I know my mentality and the way I feel about, you know, organized religion or whatever, I might feel a bit, I don't know if I want to enter that world. Whereas like faith, having faith and believing in a religious way in a deity, I feels like a very accessible thing that I could absolutely get into. So yeah, sorry, Emma.
I think you just hit it. No, my gosh, no. I think you just hit it directly on the head. Being a cleric is not about being religious. Being a cleric is about belief, because that is where your entire source of magic comes from, is your belief and devotion to something. Right? Like I even think of the, you know, amazing example that, you know, Laura Bailey did in the latest season of Critical Role and Campaign 2. Like, she also, please, spoilers, if you haven't finished the season, you can cover your ears.
Spoilers!
You can
get earmuffs
now. Spoilers.
For like, it's only like a minute. Just keep a minute ahead.
But like, she believed in her god so hard that she got powers from him, and he got more powerful. So like, whether he was a god or not, she believed in him so hard that that's where the source of power came from. Because like you with clerics, you get this beautiful built-in sense of devotion. They know what it's like to deeply, deeply care for something. And it makes it, I think, easier to access for you as a player those relationships at the table to other characters, because your character is already gives a crap about something. And like, and that can be a really cool part of your character arc and growth about like, what does it mean to worship for your character? How does your, if your character participates in organized religion, what does that look like? How do they show their piety? How did they find religion? Were they, was that thrust upon them? Did they choose it willingly? Did they, were they born into it? Like, how did they get here? And I think those are all amazing threads that you can explore through like the narrative side of a cleric's RP.
I have three things.
Dish your three things.
Three things to stay. The first thing is, it's really me not saying anything, but just, it's funny you mentioned that example. And that's all I'm going to say that's all I'm going to say about that. If anybody listens to this in like 6 months, you may have an understanding of why. Yeah. It's funny you mentioned that. Number two, I wanted to completely agree that this is in a real world setting as well. Like, I honestly think that most people's understanding of even the concept of religion is it's very tainted by just experiences with specific organizations. And rather, because at its core, religion is a faith. Yeah. It's faith. Mm. It's faith in anything, which is like, I would argue you could have atheists who are religious. Mm. It's like, in a sense that like, they believe in the principles that they adhere to every bit as strongly as a religious person, and they live their lives according to that. There are quite a few nerd fandoms. Well, fandoms in general, not even just nerds. Fandoms in general. Sports,
that's
fandoms.
True. Agreed.
There are like, there's a lot of, it really just refers to an extremely, not even extremely, just a very, very strong belief. There's a lot of political systems and groups that are very, like, they're basically religious in the way that they function. Maybe not in the same way as like the organization itself, but the way that you like buy into a set of beliefs and you're like, okay, these things are hereby forever good. These things are hereby forever bad. This is the dogma that I now buy into. It now informs my moral system, blah, 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 blah. So theoretically, you could have like a socialist cleric who like really strongly, you're not serving a deity, but your god is essentially seizing the means of production, or is that more communist?
Communism.
Communist is seizing the means of production. But yeah, your god is essentially the socialist ideal, and it's because that's what it comes down to, is how a person engages with their beliefs and how strongly they engage with their beliefs. And then number three is a question: what would you two characterize as the difference between clerics and paladins from an ideological standpoint?
Ooh.
And how would you say that that's borne out in the mechanics?
I have a thought. So I think that paladins are, I mean, maybe this is me drawing on history that I don't think I can speak anything about, but paladins to me strike me as a holy warrior. They're the people in the very front line of the battlefield that if there is a cause in the name of this god, they're going to be the first ones out there on the field, you know, slashing down people in the name of Cord, I don't know, some god or something like that. But whereas clerics are the people who are going to be, you know, giving the speeches, they're the ones who are going to be, they are the intermediary between the mortal coil and the divine. So for me, the paladin, you know, says, my god told my religion to do this. Maybe I get spoken to once in my lifetime, maybe I don't. But the cleric has that divine connection. They can commune. They can, you know, they can call down their, they can literally call down their god and be like, I need help with this one thing, as we'll talk about in a minute. But that's where I kind of see it that way.
I think I would say for me, and this is a very oversimplified way of saying it, but I think for me, it would be a cleric is again about faith. And it's like the belief in something, whereas I think for me, paladins is like the devotion to that thing. It's like the idea that like, I will lay everything, all of my earthly goods, my body, my world, my everything at the foot of the door of my deity. It doesn't have to be that extreme, right. But like that's the kind of the simplified version of it in my head. Whereas I think the cleric is someone who would still seek to, would probably still seek to challenge and still seek to mine that faith and understand that faith. And do you know what I mean? I think there's just like a slightly different, just a way of interacting with that particular deity that they have. And I can think it bears slightly different fruits because in a mechanical sense, I think then it means that your paladin is bearing the strength of your god, whereas the cleric is bearing like the will of your god. Do you know what I mean? Like the will of your god to interact with the world and to change the world and shape the world, whereas the paladin is bearing the kind of brute force and strength of and power of your god.
It's almost like the cleric is exploring the truth or the doctrine of that god, whereas the paladin is enacting the doctrine or the truth of that god.
Oh yeah, sort of like the heart
that's it. Yes. I think that's what I would say, because I think that it goes to show that like, because like I think with a paladin, like I think they could lose their abilities like that if they did the wrong thing. Do you know what I mean? Like if the god was to like to if they were to defy a god, I think that literally their inability to devote themselves 100% would enable them unable to use certain powers, or, you know, whereas I think for a cleric, I think that's almost like a healthy thing to have a complicated, you know, there is a they acknowledge the fact there's a complicated relationship with a
Well, you even have the Oathbreaker Paladin oath, right? So there's mechanics built in about like what happens when you break your oath. But a cleric, it's like, I think it is, you know, I think it's built into the, not that a lot of role play stuff is built in, but there is space for you to explore what it's like to fall in and out of faith with your god. And like what happens when you have those like faith testing moments, those like moments where you come to the brink. Maybe you ask the cleric, your character asks their god for help in a desperate moment and the god does not respond.
Yes.
What happens then? If that's a true test of your faith, how does your character respond? And all of that is like juicy, beautiful narrative role play stakes for your character. Like,
whereas the paladin just goes, well, I suppose he was supposed to die.
I suppose he was busy.
So fair enough by me.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And it's like, I even think about my own journey, like with my own character, Nepenthe, as a, you know, I'm a grave cleric. And which is my favorite subclass, and I will tell you why shortly.
Yeah.
But the, you know, I kind of structured her growing up in this kind of like secluded, cloistered order of essentially nuns, just like a bunch of priestesses who were just in a temple, and that like that's where they lived their whole lives. There would be some priestesses who would stay their whole lives in that temple. So Nepi grew up in a world that was very black and white. That is like, I know what I know, and sure, I'm this wise character, but I'm not worldly. You know, I know a very large thing about a very small subset of things. So she has to go out into the world, and she, through interactions with her god, through interactions with other people, have now grown to see the world is not black and white anymore. It's gray. Mm. And, you know, she's learning that there is so much nuance to the world through her goddess and the way that she interacts with death and the people around her. So you've got, like, I think something that's really, really important for if you're choosing to play a cleric is to have a really good discussion, ongoing discussion with your DM about what your cleric's religion or, you know, their faith looks like. Is there practices that are like ordained and traditional in the order? Do you choose to follow them or not? Like, what do you do and what are the consequences of that? And like, how widespread is your religion? Like, my character's religion is like, there's like three temples on the whole world. Like, it's not very widespread. And for a long time, there was just one. And then, you know, my Nepenthe founded two more on two different continents. She's like, I got to do this now. That's part of my goal is to like spread my religion and spread the good word of Nepthysiket, who is her goddess and stuff like that. So
yeah,
it's, I think that there's some beautiful moments that you can craft out of figuring out what your religion is like.
I think you've hit a really beautiful thing there, which is like, as we always like to do on this show, is like challenge DMs everywhere to have a more nuanced view of what a religion could be in your game, so that you can allow
Absolutely.
The cleric to feel accessible, because if you turn around to all of your players and say, oh, it's only like really organized religion and this is how they practice, and if you don't practice, you don't, you know, that I think that's going to really limit someone's ability to interact with that class and to get the most out of it. So definitely, you know, make space for that. Have that in your game, but have space for other stuff and other things that your players, I think, might bring. I think, yeah, no, go.
Oh, yep. I had a note on that. I think it's also worth saying that I think it's best to just have a conversation about it, because if you do have a system where religion tends to be really organized and there are very specific rules to follow in the game, that actually can open up a whole new realm of possibilities to explore in terms of how your character in particular relates to those specific practices and restrictions. Perhaps if there's other denominations who have slightly different doctrinal things, like, it depends on how much you want to explore, but you can have like some really interesting character journeys and some really interesting, like, I guess, philosophical journeys, because you're looking at, oh wait, how important to my actual relationship to my faith and the deity or whatever it is I'm serving are these specific rituals and practices that the rest of the faith adheres to, and what happens if you break with that? What happens if you go full Martin Luther and you nail 95 theses to the door of a church and you get excommunicated and start an entirely new denomination for the first time in like the history of this religion? What, like, there's a lot of really cool possibilities. So I think it's worth 100% having a conversation, because if a player wants to do that, great. If they don't and they just want like a loose, like, hey, I don't want to have to follow, I want to have to be part of a church, or if it is a church, it's like a real kind of new agey, like, we just kind of
we
have coffee we give you coffee and we just kind of hang out and chat for a while. If it's that
I
kind
love,
of thing, sure.
I love
like,
that
I,
because
whatever.
It, you know, I think when people think of the stereotypical cleric in a campaign, they think of very rules bound, tight laced, and kind of like as a vassal at the whim of their god. So I think that there's so much space for players to develop. To whether it's a pre-existing religion in the world that the DM has created, or to develop their own kind of relationship to that. There's so much space to explore that. And you don't have to be a religious person to really enjoy playing a character who is. Like, I'm a supremely non-religious person, and I love the religion that my character is a part of. Like, I mean, to be fair, RDM Tim let me create it from the ground up. So, like, he was just like, do you want to create a religion? I was like, yes,
please.
I do. And here is the entire 2,500 year history of this religion. So your players will want to engage with that kind of stuff if you let
and
them.
And if they come to you
right?
with a cleric, I think that there's probably something that they are interested in some way. So,
I mean, you'll be everybody's best friend.
Yes.
Like on the...
Unless you are like aforementioned cleric who didn't really, from Critical Role, who doesn't do a whole lot of healing. I think we could genuinely chat about this all day, because it's such a rich topic. And we can kind of keep this discussion going, but why don't we dig into a little bit of the mechanics of the cleric, because let's get crunchy with some numbers. I know it's Jeremy's favorite time of day when we get crunchy with them numbers. So to just like a very brief overview, you're going to be wisdom is going to be your go-to. You want to get that wisdom in there. We normally do like recommendations for like lineages or races that could work, I think, you know, get a bonus to wisdom and
with the Tasha stuff
you can mix it up. And also I think that it's less of a clerics are so versatile that I don't know there's too many that I think, oh my god, it's not like a Arakokra rogue or ranger or whatever where it's just like, well, having a flying speed makes you broken or something. So unless someone's got like one of those to throw out, we can just, I think, dig into these.
Maybe this is me always leaning into the narrative side of things, but if you have a particular type of cleric that you want to play, ask your DM what kind of god would fit, and if there are particular races in that world that follow that god. If you're not necessarily tied to playing one thing or the other, like maybe you want to worship, like, you know, a sea god, and maybe a triton would be the right option, or a sea elf, or like maybe you want to worship a an air primordial, then maybe an Aarakocra would be a good choice. So if you're not necessarily tied down to one specific race, talk to your DM about what might fit in the world and where what kind of story you want to tell about the like the cleric that you want to build.
I'll throw this out really quickly. I played a, and because I'm going to talk about this a little bit but later, but I played a forge cleric and I played a war forged. And the backstory that I created was that like, that they were literally created by the divine magic of this forge god. So therefore, like, it was just their engine, right? Like, their engine was the will of this divine being, and it kind of just flowed through them. And I don't think it was like a conscious choice that my character was making to kind of do that. It was just like, that was a part of their character. They were a literal kind of machination of the divine being itself. And it was fun because that, I don't think in my head then I was like, I'm not even encountering religion. You know what I mean? Like because everything I do is in service. You know what I mean? So I didn't even, I don't think it even crossed my character's mind to do anything or act a certain way or be a certain way because it was just who they were. Anyway, we'll get more on that later.
You get that sweet D8. Very middle of the road,
better than a wizard. And better also, it's worth pointing out as well that you get proficiency with light, medium, and shields.
Yes, like, bless that plus two.
Come on, everyone. If you don't have something in your other hand, get yourself a shield. It just really helps. You know what I mean? It's good.
It's also worth mentioning that multiple cleric subclasses are kind of explicitly designed to be viable in melee combat.
And proficient
combat
with heavy armor
so,
as well. I think,
yeah, a lot of them are proficient with heavy armor. So it's
I'm going to give a good example of this in a bit. I'm very excited. Cool.
Yes. You get all simple weapons. You get wisdom and charisma saving throws. You get a couple of skills. Nothing. This is not a skill based class.
If we're doing recommendations, I would recommend if you're the only cleric in the party, take religion. Just because it's if there is a divine-ish moment or something means you need to recall something about a god, generally people are going to be looking to the cleric to do that.
They're going to be looking for you to heal. I have a plus two. And they're like, what? Come on. You can at least have a plus four here, surely.
Which, actually, I'm going to throw out there on that note, just a brief aside. I don't like that religion is an intelligence-based
skill.
Oh,
it's not
skill.
In our campaign. It's always... it's both in our campaign. So, like, if you're doing a thing, if you're praying, or, like, if you're communing, or you need to make... you're calling down your god, and you need to make a check, a religion check, that's wisdom. If you're recalling something about religion,
trying to recall information.
That is so wild. Okay. I didn't realize that. Yeah. Officially, that's a dumb thing.
I think it should just be both.
Yeah. I think it should be. Yeah.
There is a distinction. Yeah,
if it's a wisdom-based thing,
the kind of check you're going to make.
Potentially even charisma. Like if for paladins, potentially even charisma. I think that's one of those skills that I feel like as a DM, I'm willing to kind of play around with and be like, how do you approach the divine?
How do you connect to the divine? Like, because there was we approached that in the sense that you always said to us, how does your character approach approach spirits, which is slightly different, but like for Muti, it was about arcane. He very much saw them as like an arcane part of the world. Whereas for Onganagamra, I'm pretty sure it was religion, wasn't it?
At least ancestors were religion. Mm-hmm. I can't remember if I think the spirits
I
made
think
so. Them too.
I think it's like the same thing of that. You like you could, you know, an intimidation check could be made with charisma or strength.
Mm.
Like I think from like a, you know, there's one thing where you're like intimidating someone with your words, and then you're just literally standing there being the most imposing person. I think that there's a lot of space to play with that stuff if your DM is cool.
I think we've spoken about that. I think a bit briefly about the idea of changing around some of those and just being a bit more flexible with them. And I think this is definitely somewhere. Mm-hmm. That you'd have to, because it seems so strange that wouldn't be wisdom based anyway. At level, I was going to say, well, spell casting.
This is worth saying. I think wizards.
Oh,
not wizards,
Jeremy,
clerics.
Jeremy.
Come on, get in the bin,
clerics.
Gosh,
I'm already in the bin. Good I'm boy. Sitting in the bin right now. This is sounding very strange now. There's a lot of subtext to this. Anyway, the clerics, they prepare spells, which we've already covered a couple classes that prepare spells. Basically, you have a known list, and you choose which ones you prepare for each day. Clerics usually pray for their spells. You can kind of characterize how that happens. It's really up to you how you're going to engage with it. But I wanted to say, clerics have a bomb spell
so
list.
Good. It's so good.
Yes, it is the I'm such a big proponent of specifically inflict wounds and guiding bolt pure damage. They're the best first level damaging spells in the game, like followed by maybe magic missile or burning hands, I guess, if you really want those. But like inflict wounds, you're dropping 3d10. 3d10 necrotic, and you can crit with it.
You can
hit somebody for 6d10 damage. You can hit somebody for 6d10 necrotic damage at level
and, like,
one.
The like cleric low level spells, like as a cleric at a low level, you are so dangerous.
Yeah,
because not only can you heal, but your low level spells hit like trucks, and you are like you enjoy the like have the beauty of a full caster without being too squishy, and you can get in there with a full melee attack, like your party's favorite.
And it's worth stating as well, you start off with three cantrips, which is very useful. I think that might be the one of the highest, because...
And the guidance resistance combo?
Yeah.
Just like,
do you know what I mean?
You gotta take guidance. You have to take guidance.
Like, exactly. Guidance is, it's kind of broken. It's great. Like, and Bless!
Oh, and Bless!
Yeah.
I forgot about Bless. Bless is such, I mean, it's a first level spell. It's such
and
a
Bane.
Good spell.
Bless and Bane.
Bless and Bane.
Healing word.
So good.
But still, well, it's good.
Gets that, but still, it's such a good, it's a great spell.
Clerics are awesome. Clerics and are awesome. At second level, did you know that clerics get channel divinity? So this is basically you get to, you channel the divine energy of your deity directly, and you can do one of two, you start with two such effects. So you've got turn undead, which is determined by your, that's determined by your domain?
There's one that's
You pick your domain at level one.
This
is one of the I think
starts
three classes that picks their subclass at level one, along with the sorcerer.
Yes, that
the
makes
warlock.
A lot of sense, because I was like, how does that then?
And then you get the channel divinity features at level two.
Yes.
So it's just like, I'm committed to this religion, and then God says, here, have this.
And then all the saves are determined by your spell save DC, etc. And then you get the effects back at the end of a short or a long rest. You can use your channel divinity again. And at sixth level, basically you get extra uses of it at sixth and 18th. Level, so you get two uses at sixth and three uses at 18th, which is pretty sweet.
And your channel divinity, on that note, you can use your channel divinity either for the specific, the domain specific purpose that your god grants you, or you can use it for turn undead. All clerics have this ability. As an action, you present your holy symbol. Basically, you scare a bunch of undead.
You get some skeletal
knees
knocking, basically.
All the undead that can see or hear you. Yeah, they just have to see or hear you within 30 feet of you. They got to make a wisdom save. If they fail, they are turned, which
they
means
get turned up.
They're turned
they
for 1
lot.
Minute
they
or until
they
take any
drinking.
Damage.
They
get turned.
Real turned.
Yeah, and they will not turn down for
they
anything.
They will turn down for what, though?
But they must... That's true. For damage. Or the passage of 1 minute of time. But they have to spend their turns trying to move as far away from you as they can, and they cannot willingly move into a space within 30 feet of you. They also can't take reactions. And then for their actions, they can only take the dash action. Or try to escape from an effect that prevents it from moving. So basically, it's like... Fear.
On things
it's
that
like the
typically
fear spell,
can't
but
have,
just
the fear
for undead.
Cost, have the fear effect on them.
Yes.
Yeah, I think a lot of them aren't usually.
Usually,
able to be
I think like undead seems to it's they it tends to be a resistance or whatever to the fear condition. So, awesome. What do we have next? It's an optional, I believe.
Is it? I think is this. Do you want to take
will.
This one,
this
Emma?
Is, so in Tasha's, we've got a couple extra options. At first level, there's some optional cleric spells that you can take. Would really recommend Aura of Purity. It's a very good one, a personal favorite of mine. Mm. But at second level, you can take Harness Divine Power. So you can expend a use of your channel divinity to fuel your spells. And as a bonus action, you can touch your holy symbol, utter a prayer to your god, and regain one expanded spell slot, which can be a level of no higher than half your proficiency bonus rounded up. So thank you, wizards. The number of times you can use this feature is based on the level you've reached. Second level once, sixth level twice, and 18th level thrice. You regain all expended uses when you finish a long rest, which is really nice. I really like that.
Yeah.
It's kind of got that like...
It's like arcane recovery, right? Like it's a similar...
Exactly. Yeah, it's like an arcane divine recovery. Yeah, which is really nice too.
You will be like, man, there's so many times where I can just think, you know, if we had one more spell slot here. We might have
one more spell. Take a third level, get your revivify back. Like you got one in the pocket for that.
Yeah. If you're high level, you can get back that third level spell slot. That is, very, very nice.
Very cool.
Emma, just by the way, just let us know when you need to nip off. By the way, if you want to go
perfect.
Now,
no, yeah, can, he'll cool. you. It's no, it's he'll just Tim will just bring him sure. over, so that'll be cool, all good. Cool, cool, cool. Yeah. Cool.
Did you see a baby extended?
Here's a baby.
He's very cute. You'll see him in a sec.
Cool. So we have ability score improvements at 4th, 8th, 12th, 16th, and 19th level. We all know what those are. We don't need to go into those. What is next, Jeremy?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We have cantrip versatility. Ooh. This is an optional feature. Whenever you reach the level in this class that grants the ability score improvement feature, this is from Tasha's as well. And actually, a lot of spellcasting classes got this. I can't remember if all of them did, but a lot of them did. Whenever you hit a level that grants the ability score improvement feature, such as 4th, 8th, 12th, 16th, or 19th levels, you can replace one cantrip you learned from this class's spellcasting feature with another cantrip from the cleric spell list. So you can just swap out them cantrips. If you weren't happy with the ones that you started with,
cantrips can become obsolete at a certain point. If you have spells that are better or just abilities that kick in at some point that just renders them a little bit less useful.
I'm not mistaken, Toll the Dead...
Wait a second. Somebody is knocking. Please continue talking.
If I'm not mistaken, Toll the Dead is a cantrip, and that is a wonderful cleric one because it does a bunch of
levels
up.
Yes, it does.
Yeah,
it's really
great.
So, it's a 1d12. My word.
Yeah.
1d12. Then it goes up to 2. Then it goes up to... Oh, hold on, what's this here? Oh, right, okay. So on a saving throw, even if it saves, it takes d8s instead of d12s, which is crazy.
Yeah. And if it's already taken damage, it takes d12s, and if it has not, it takes
d8s. That's how it is.
I mean, it is a save or suck cantrip.
Oh, okay, so it is
so
a save or suck.
Okay,
right.
Nothing
see,
happens.
Yeah. But if it's already taken damage.
Exactly, and you could finish off something with a cantrip.
I mean, at the end of the, like,
you know what I mean?
Even like, because it scales up to 17th level, you get 4d12 or 4d8. Like, if you're doing 4d12s on a thing for a cantrip, even at level 17, that's still a very viable option. 4d12 is no joke.
This HeadGum podcast is brought to you by Aura Frames.
That is right.
From grandmothers to new mothers, aunts, even the friends of your life, every mom loves an Aura Frame.
Holy shit, even aunts?
Yes, especially aunts.
Oh, well.
Because it was named the best digital photo frame by Wirecutter and selected as one of Oprah's favorite things. I mean, these Aura Frames are guaranteed to bring joy to moms of all ages.
I believe it.
You have an Aura Frame, don't you?
Yes, I actually more than believe it. I know it. I've got one for my mom, my mother-in-law, my grandmother-in-law.
And dare I say, your aunt?
And dare you say, my aunt and my aunt-in-law. Everyone's got one. Everyone loves them.
I mean, Mother's Day is right around the corner, and there's no better gift than a digital photo frame. You give them the frame. It's got preloaded pictures in there. And you know what? You can update it with an app. So every time you take a new picture of a sweet little... person or place or thing in your life, it gets automatically sent to that frame.
Exactly.
And right now, Aura has a great deal for Mother's Day. Listeners can save on the perfect gift by visiting AuraFrames.com to get $30 off plus free shipping on their best-selling frame. Holy smokes.
Excellent deal.
Yeah, that's AuraFrames.com. You use the code HEADGUM at checkout to save.
HEADGUM. Nice.
Yes. HeadGum. It's easy to set up. It's loved by everybody, including Oprah, including your aunt. Mm-hmm. So do check them out. That's AuraFrames.com. Use code HeadGum at checkout to save.
Damn right.
And terms and conditions apply, of course.
Of course.
Thanks again to Aura.
That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget.
Mm-mm-mm.
Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient. Comfortable. Ah.
Of those spell slots, Toll the Dead is a fantastic
hell yeah,
cleric
and you can
option.
Just spam this as well. Like, you've got a range of 60 feet on this. You could just be, you know, running away and just you know, that's so that's very, very good. I like that a lot.
I think Wizards did that. Just they gave the clerics all of the like really cool spells because they're like, please play clerics. Give your party a healer.
Please.
Give your party a healer, please.
We didn't even talk about spirit guardians.
God. Oh, man.
That's such a so cool good. Spell.
Or even spiritual and
that's
spiritual
really
weapon,
good.
Too.
Yes.
Like, just bring another
yes.
part of yourself up on the field that gets its, like, that acts on a bonus
so
action.
Useful
and, like,
because
on
it
your
means
turn.
If you,
so
if,
useful.
If you don't have a ton of AC, you can just get yourself nice and close and be hitting things in the same way that everyone else is without all the risk attached to it. It's good. It's very, very good.
Absolutely.
We have... I believe
is it my turn?
I think I'm
going to
talk about Blessed Strikes from Tasha's.
I think it's just one more.
One.
I think it's Destroy Undead.
Destroy Undead.
I can talk about Destroy Undead.
Do it.
So Destroy Undead is delightful. So at fifth level, your turn undead becomes Destroy Undead. When an undead fails its saving throw against that turn undead feature, when you use that channel divinity, the creature is instantly destroyed if its challenge rating is below a certain threshold as shown on the table below, which is decent. Like if the you know, zombies and stuff like the skeletons, you can just be like, you're gone.
All of
and
you.
Be gone with
all
you.
All of you are gone.
All of you within this range. And it comes up to challenge rating 4. A challenge rating 4 undead at level 17, you can just bomb. And I'm thinking of a moment in our Blackwater campaign where our necromancer, because there's a necromancer and then myself as a grave cleric in the party. So the necromancer, we had, you know, killed this giant. And our necromancer brought it back as a zombie to like kind of do her bidding on the battlefield. And the zombie was the son of a baron that was not very nice or something. And we were in like a fighting pit. And then at the end of the battle, I remember Nepi, my cleric, just pointed at the baron because he'd been really awful to us. And she just crumpled his nephew into dust. And I was just like, be gone with you. So there's some good flavor of that. Like, yeah. So like, it feels very powerful just to like, let's just destroy all of these undead on the battlefield.
It's a real tide turner of an ability as well. Like if you're up against, you can be up against like 20, like, you know, CR2s, like I don't care what high level you are. Mm-hmm. Like they're going to take a chunk out of you. Do you know what I mean? Like just through sheer
Absolutely.
Action economy and whatever else. So like the ability to just wipe all of them out at once, that's the kind of thing that gives me DM sweats, I'll be honest. Like, that's the kind of thing where
yes,
I go, oh,
no. He's got this wonderfully balanced battle that it's just on the hint of deadly, and then your cleric is like, no, thank you.
I will
you.
Even this up immediately. What do you mean your big bad guy has minions? No more.
No more. No, thank you. Goddess says no. So...
Clerics, the class that has the best chance of surviving a zombie apocalypse.
Absolutely.
So I think clerics would thrive.
Easily
goes
the best chance.
Say, like, I just, they got a high AC.
Them and paladins.
Hug your clerics close during a zombie apocalypse.
Yes.
That's the one thing we've learned so far today.
Yes. And actually, speaking of surviving a zombie apocalypse, this next ability, my goodness. Sorry, a very cute baby just appeared on our Zoom, which is so adorable.
I could only see their eyes for a second. It was just a pair of eyes peeking above.
The tiniest little dungeon delver has shown up.
Yeah. So. Oh, you go get those little kobolds or whatever it is.
Yes, go delve down and get your kobolds, buddy. Yeah.
A little yeah. cleric
he is my,
in training.
He is my little cleric in training. That's absolutely correct.
So cute. So cute. So then we have Blessed Strikes, which is an optional feature, and this is absolutely a surviving zombie apocalypse moment, I think. Mm-hmm. I think this is actually kind of insane. This is great. This is a great ability. So basically, starting 8th level, you are blessed with divine might in battle. When a creature takes damage from one of your cantrips or weapon attacks, you can deal a 1d8 of radiant damage to that creature. Once you deal this damage, you can't use this feature again until the start of your next turn. So there's no limit to this. Just once per turn, you get to add d8 of radiant damage, which once again, most of those undead, if you haven't already toasted them, probably have a vulnerability of some, or might have a vulnerability
Absolutely.
To radiant damage.
Yeah,
which,
or it'll mess them up.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
I think it's a...
You get a mini smite
yeah.
per turn.
Yeah.
It's nice.
It's very
it's
nice.
Very nice.
I like it. Okay, and coupled with some other ridiculously good cleric stuff, then... You know, I think that is.
I really like the options that Tashas has brought in. I will sing the praises of Tashas from here to next week. But I think it just really allows you to flavor your cleric the way that you want it done. Mm. And I think that's, you know, in good conversation with your DM, because, you know, maybe some clerics take, you know, Divine Strike, some clerics take the harness divine power because your god is just like, oh, you can have a rest now. So I think that there's a really nice moments to tie those in narratively as well with giving you all of those crunchy kickbacks. Making the narratives and mechanics kiss.
And it also
making
helps. Kiss. Yes, make them kiss. I think one of the nice things as well is it allows for...
guys, they won't stop
the narrative
kissing.
And mechanics won't stop kissing.
We still be here?
It's making me uncomfortable. Yeah, I was just gonna,
do we start something here? Are they like together? Are they a thing?
Are they a thing now? Wouldn't that be nice?
Is the baby a cleric? Is the baby they're gonna make a cleric?
That's.
But I was just gonna throw out that really quickly before we go on to our last main cleric ability, which is just I think that this allows. I think Tasha's helped. Spellcasters a lot in the when you have those real sloggy days where you've gone out and you started fighting and you know 8 a.m. in the morning and you know it's like one of those it happens a lot in D&D where you kind of lose track and you go what this
yes.
was a day we've been playing for
yes.
like four
the
sessions
four session
what?
Day we've all
yeah.
been
you know what
there
I mean? And everyone yeah and yeah. everyone is burnt out on everything and I think because realistically if you're especially like wizards and sorcerers and stuff you are by the end of that day you've got
yeah.
nothing. Do you know what I mean? So I think that Tasha's really gave back to the spellcaster and helping them keep up a little bit in terms of endurance with some of the martial
totally.
Classes. Because, yeah, just stuff like this, I think this is like, oh, okay, I haven't got any spells left, but I can still do an extra d8 per turn. Do you know what I mean? It's like it's a little bit in lieu of like having a spell or something, and you know the divine recovery, you know that sort of thing. I think it also helps, depending on what
type of cleric you've built too. Like if you're a more support cleric, you're going to be using all of those healing spells. You're going to be using kind of like the buffing, the area of effect spells, stuff like that. And having one of those back is going to could turn the tide in the middle of a battle. And if you know if you're a more up close like tanky or melee cleric, you've still got your actions, right? Like you've still got, you know, your melee attacks, and those you don't need a spell slot for.
Yep. Jeremy, why don't you take us home for this? Well, one hell of an ability.
Yeah. Ooh, and actually, I wanted to throw out. I think something that if you look at the Tasha stuff, we talked a little bit about the spell casting and how we're like, whoa, this is such a great spell list. Clerics are one of the few spell casting classes that got no additional spells
from Tasha's.
In Tasha's. Bards got additional spells. I can't remember who else, but there were others. I think druids got additional spells. I know bards and druids both did, and a few other ones did, I think.
Tasha's gave an additional spell list?
No, but not to clerics.
Yeah,
clerics don't have that.
Yeah,
good.
Think.
They got
first
they?
Level. They
spirit
get aura
shroud,
of vitality,
aura of life,
spirit shroud, aura of life,
aura of purity, summon
celestial,
sunbeam, sunburst, and
me.
Power word heal.
Oh, well,
well,
never mind.
How do you feel, Jeremy?
I feel like a fool.
Good.
I'm just gonna sit and stew.
Why don't you ask your god for a divine intervention?
Well done.
Which is Jasper
to just roll back time.
Which is to for Jasper
so
to
I just
cut
never
that
said
out.
That.
No, I'm joking. I'm leaving it in.
No, leave it in.
I'm leaving it in.
I think we got to leave it in. But the yeast. But hey, check out those additional spells. Check out those additional spells.
Jeremy, what is Divine Intervention? Tell us.
Divine Intervention is the 10th level cleric ability. Interestingly, one of the only classes that does not have a bunch of abilities past 10th level, which really you don't need many after this.
Nope.
You can basically pray to whatever deity or force you serve and ask it for help. You get to describe what you want it to do, and then you roll percentile dice. If you roll a number equal to or lesser than your cleric level, your deity intervenes. The DM chooses the nature of the intervention. The effect of any cleric spell or cleric domain spell would be appropriate, but, you know, who knows? It could be something bigger. But you can only, if you succeed on this, if your deity actually does intervene, you can't use it again for 7 days. Otherwise, you can just use it again after you finish a long rest. So, like, right off the bat, you have a 1 in 10 chance of summoning divine power to do some crazy thing. Who knows?
What happens at...
I was just about to go on to that, but it's at 20th level is where things get really ridiculous.
Yeah.
Your call for intervention automatically succeeds.
This automatically makes the cleric the best level 20th character you could make. No, but I mean genuinely, because I don't think there is any class, like, literally, you say you got into a fight to like a level 20 anything versus a cleric, they just summon the hand of their god to come pluck you off the ground and throw you 300 miles away or something. I don't know.
I think if you've been serving as a cleric, if you've been serving your god that long, and Yin been like,
oh yeah,
it's for sure justified just to be goddess just comes down, just grabs and is just like, goodbye, and just throws the villain away.
See you later. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
I feel like if you have like a 20th level cleric and you're a DM, I feel like you have to start building in reasons for them not to be able to just divine intervention your big bad. Mm-hmm. They just walk into the, like, you've had this whole battle planned, and they walk in and they pray to their deity to ask that this big bad is destroyed for all time, and you're like, oh.
I think though the thing that does happen at level 20, which we probably should think about, which is that, like, most of the things you're facing are probably akin to or close to a deity themselves.
Yes, this is very true.
Because, like, I mean, like, things like Tarrasques and stuff are all considered, like, demigods, and anyway, you know, if you're fighting Tiamat, that is a god. Like, I don't know if a deity would have the ability to just... I stop you. Like, I don't think
you just summon your own god to come fight.
Yeah,
Tiamat.
That's what I like. But I think I might even rule that. Do you know what I mean? I might say that they can take a physical form and fight
Absolutely.
On your side, sort of thing. But, like, it would be kind of, you know, it like if it was possible for the gods to just come down and pluck Tiamat out of the wherever they are, they might have done that a long time ago and saved you a lot of hassle.
I think a lot of it is kind of like the wish spell that it's just like if it the way I'll often use divine intervention is to replicate a spell that I may not have access to, or that is a higher level than I can cast at that time. Mm-hmm. That's often how I'll use divine intervention. But I mean, I've seen people do crazy things with divine intervention. It's a delightful ability. So fun.
And I think as with it having such a slim chance, I've never seen or heard it happen yet. I think it happens at some point in a critical role thing,
yes.
But I haven't listened to it yet.
Oh,
or
yes,
whatever.
It does.
yeah, I've heard this. I do feel like it would be the most satisfying thing if you're like, look, I'm gonna roll divine intervention, like, we need help here. I just, like, the chips are down. I just feel like it would be a really cool...
It happens in Dimension 20, and they start making... The players then begin to make jokes because Brennan's reaction is so intense. They're like, did you just come? He's like, yes, I came so hard. Because it's literally like, yes! Oh, yes! Even though it was one of his players who rolled it. It wasn't even him.
He feels so vindicated as, like, the player, because you're just like, I called and my God answered. That's so great. And can definitely make or break something in the middle of a battle, for sure. Heck yeah.
Shall we move on to some subclasses? I think we've each got one we're going to talk about. Should we go in the same order? So our lovely guest gets to round off the episode. So I'm talking about Forge domain. Big yes. fan of this. Like I said before, I played a Warforged who was sort of created by this divine magic. And tell you a little fun fact. I'm a level 1 character with an armor class of 20. Clerics be good, yo. This was super fun. Mm-hmm. When I managed this, I felt like I'd achieved a feat as well as potentially gaining some in the future. It was very cool because Warforged have like an inbuilt defense, which gives them that plus one to AC, and then you get some extra abilities. So starting at a little bit of kind of thing about what Forge domain is, essentially you're looking at a god of kind of like workmanship of like tools, creating things. This can be weapons in some ways if you want to skew it in that way, but it's more about the creation of the weapons, more about the if you imagine your dwarven kind of style god or whatever, you know, the typical ones that are, you know, down there in the mines making the metals and that kind of thing. That's a traditional flavoring, but obviously you can flavor it however the heck that you like. So starting at first level, you get some bonus proficiencies, which as do most, which I think is, yes, heavy armor and smith tools, which is very, very useful. Mm-hmm. You also get some new spells. You get access to Identify and Searing Smite, which is good fun. Definitely good fun to have a smite thrown in there. And you also get Blessing of the Forge, which basically, essentially, is just that you can... Let me just check if you can... Oh yes, so basically until the end of your next long rest, you can choose to basically give yourself a plus one to your armor or a plus one to attack and damage rolls. Mm-hmm. It's worth clarifying that it doesn't make a magical weapon or magical armor. It's just that you get a plus one to your AC.
No, it says the object becomes a magic item.
Oh, does it?
Yeah, you touch Blessing of the Forge, you
does.
Can touch one
it
has to be a non-magical object, but yes. It can either be a suit of armor or a simpler martial weapon.
It becomes a magic item, yes, and it becomes a gains a plus one. Yes, that is very true, but then you can't use this feature again until the long rest, but you can basically change it the next day. But I just kept mine on AC because an armor class of 20 at level 1 is very, very fun, and it makes me very hard to hit at such a level.
The Baby Artificer.
Yes.
It's basically, yeah,
I think
the
that
baby
like
artificer.
The domains are almost like their own little multi-classes unto themselves, right? Like if the Forge domain's like the mini artificer, you've got like the Arcana domain, which could be like your mini wizard and stuff like that. So I think that the domains have so much fun. Like you can really flavor your cleric however you want to play it.
Mm. I think it's a little bit akin to the Bard, actually. We spoke about the Bard having the ability with all of its subclasses to flavor it in such different ways and to take it in such drastically different directions in terms of how it feels to play. The Valor is just such a good martial, effectively becomes like a martial class. And, you know, here we've got a very, very good sort of defensive class and Tinkering class, as I'm about to explain, because... At second level, you get Artisan's Blessing. So you conduct a hour-long ritual and that crafts a non-magical item that must include some metal. And it can basically take the form of a simple or martial weapon, a suit of armor, 10 pieces of ammunition, a set of tools, or another metal object. And there's like a list of things that you can do. The creation is completed at the end of an hour. And you basically can choose where it appears in like a 5-foot space from you. But again, you can easily flavor this in any way. Like if you wanted to lean more into the artificer thing, you could physically make something. Do you know what I mean? I don't think there's any reason that you couldn't physically make something or summon a spectral forge. I don't know. I feel like there's loads of ways I could imagine this playing out. You can't create anything that's worth more than 100 gold pieces. And as a part of the ritual, you must lay out the metal, which can include coins basically equal to the value of the creation. Basically the metal transforms and then becomes the object that you want it to. The ritual can duplicate a non-magical item that contains metal, such as a key, if it possesses the original If you have it in possession during the ritual, sorry.
Okay, cool.
So you can cut another key. Yeah,
basically.
You can cut another key to the house. You can give your partner a key to the.
I love what you were
apartment.
Saying about so, how you, know, you can Twitch. Flavor, you know, the magic or these abilities to like what your cleric is doing at the time. I think of Kokanee in our campaign. He's a war cleric, but his god is all about tinkering and stuff. So when his prayer rituals are often him fixing things. Or mending things or creating things like, and it'll be Arathis's kind of divine guidance where he won't really know what he's doing. And then all of a sudden he's got this like beautiful created tinkered thing in front of him. So I think there's a lot of ways that you can flavor these abilities to really fit what your god does and how your cleric chooses to worship.
Heck yeah.
Absolutely.
We actually spoke about that on a recent episode. We were talking all about reskinning.
Yes, I listened to that episode. It was so good.
And reworking, yeah. which is really fun and definitely definitely something you could do with the cleric. And so going even further in the sort of defensive element here, Soul of the Forge is what you get at sixth level, and you gain a resistance to fire damage, and you get a +1 to AC whilst wearing heavy armor. I just worked this out for my level one character that I currently have that bumps my AC up to a 23.
Holy bananas.
Which is pretty wild to have an AC of 23 at level 6. That's
good.
This is good. This is a good
you're
thing.
You're difficult to hit.
Yeah.
You're difficult to hit, you know? So, and then at 8th level, you get Divine Strike. You gain the ability to infuse your weapons with the fiery power of the Forge. Once each of your turns and you hit a creature with a weapon attack, you can cause it to deal an extra 1d8 of fire damage to the target. When you reach 14th level, you can do 2d8. So, if you combine that with your other ability, that becomes 2d8s per hit. That's basically a smite, a free smite on every turn. That's good. It's very good.
Yeah.
And then at 17th level, you get Saint of Forge and Fire. Your affinity with fire and metal becomes more powerful. You gain immunity to fire
heck
damage.
Yeah, heck yeah.
You love to see
come
it.
Come at me, dragons, yo. Like, just come at me if you... Well, fire dragons, obviously.
Yeah, specifically red dragons.
Specifically red dragons. But okay,
maybe
everyone.
Gold.
Bring it on anyway. Bring it on. I would just stand in fire and be like, ha-ha! Like, it would be fun. I would enjoy that.
You light yourself, you douse yourself in oil and you're just constantly on fire.
Yeah.
Just running around like, hug enemies.
That's a legit tactic. Like if you've got an armor class of 23 or whatever, and you restrain something, giving them disadvantage on attacks and then just be
well,
on fire.
Well, your cleric is not going to be affected by that fireball. They're not going to be affected by that flame strike. You could call down a whole bunch of stuff and have your forge cleric be there and be like, I am so fine. I'm so fine in the middle of this.
And your cleric could just hold them there. Do you know what
I
mean? Like, if you've got a decent strength score, you just need to hold them there whilst your wizard gets the gun out. You know what I mean?
It's a good 1-2 like, fire punch.
It'll be very, very fun. And then get this, whilst wearing heavy armor, you have resistance to bludgeoning, piercing, and slashing damage from non-magical attacks. So you basically get the barbarian rage ability without the drawbacks. It's pretty tasty. I think it's very good.
It's real nice.
I would recommend that you pump up your constitution with this subclass, just so that you because you're probably going to be in the melee and distracting people and being like, hey, come and try and hit me. You'll probably fail. But if you do get hit, you want to make sure you've got plenty of hit points to fall back on. So I'd probably say like wisdom and con would not be a bad suggestion.
And probably
for
strength
subclass.
Too, because you're going to probably be a tank up front.
Yes, and strength, just because I think for the flavor. Yeah, exactly. You want to be getting, you know, if you get a, I'm trying to think of a strength based, like a mace or warhammer there.
Most weapons, I think, would be strength based. Especially if with that heavy armor, you're not going to need dex.
No. Yeah, you're not going to be sneaking anywhere.
Don't waste that.
You might
don't
need
waste
some
that in your dex.
Jasper, though, we gotta say what the other spells they get because some of these are good.
I was gonna go back on these actually. So, third level, you get Heat Metal and Magic Weapon. Heat Metal is an OG spell.
So good.
If you use it right, so it is good. Just. And if you have immunity, you can heat your own metal.
Oh, exactly. Yes.
And you can cast Heat Metal at like fifth endless. Level.
Yeah.
And then just hug someone.
Yeah, or just run someone through with your sword or something and then Heat Metal and keep holding on because it ain't hot for you.
Oh my. Can you imagine stabbing people with your heat?
Yo, if you got yourself like a reach weapon as well, oof, you could be
so
it
good.
Would be
so yeah. good.
It'd be real nasty. Then you get elemental weapon and protection from energy. So once again, you could just be absorbing damage. You can basically give yourself a resistance for an hour to either acid, cold, fire, lightning, or thunder. So you just soaking up damage at this point.
Yeah.
Like if you're even getting hit by stuff. Then you get fabricate and wall of fire, which is a
you just stand
great
in it.
Spell. It's
like
really,
at level 17, you can just
stand
in
it. It. Center it. I'll center it on myself, yes. Please, DM. then you get animate objects at ninth level. And
animate objects is a broken spell.
I'm gonna look this up right now because I haven't even.
It's so good. Look, check out if you haven't looked at animate objects. It's mm-hmm. bonkers.
What?
That spell's so good. Basically, it's like a summon spell, but the things that you summon do so much damage.
So much damage. It's like you basically become like some beefed up version of of Mickey from
Mickey
Fantasia.
Mouse and Fantasia.
That's pretty awesome. And then you also get creation as well, which is pretty amazing. Because basically you can you can pull at the wisps of shadowy material from the Shadowfell. I mean, I think you could probably flavor that slightly differently if you really wanted to keep it a bit more in your domain. You create some non-living. You basically can create like a non-living object. And
you make an object.
You can create it, and so you can create vegetable matter, stone or crystal, and basically have different durations for which the object then is it a round or does it take longer to create? I haven't actually.
No, it casts 1 minute to cast. It takes 1 minute to cast. And then depending on what you make, the object will last a different amount of time.
I see.
If you make something out of vegetable, it lasts for a day. Stone or crystal, 12 hours. Precious metals, 1 hour. Gems 10 minutes. Adamantine or mithril for 1 minute.
I mean, you could give someone adamantine armor or mithril armor for a single fight. It's pretty good. It's pretty damn good.
Or even yourself if you just want to also erase all crits.
Oh my god, talk about DM sweats.
Imagine
you finally crit on this cleric that you've been failing to hit the entire time. It also has resistance to like immunity to fire, and then you crit and it's like nope.
Oh. Well, we'll talk about erasing crits in a moment when we talk about my subclass.
Oh, dear. Jeremy, what do you got for us today?
I got to say, Forge is easily one of just mechanically speaking, one of the best cleric subclasses.
Oh, it's so good. I mean,
And another very, very good cleric subclass. Oh, and I should mention, the Forge is from Xanathar's Guide to Everything.
Ah, yes. Thank you
specifically. And the one that I'm doing is actually from the Player's Handbook. I decided to go vanilla with this one and pick the cleric subclass that would be most commonly associated with the cleric, which is the life
OG.
Domain.
Mm.
This is, real OG. You start right off the bat, like basically this is all about healing. It's all about healing.
It's all
folks.
About them heals.
It's real good at healing. If you look at the class description, it has like lists of deities and stuff that you can look at. But honestly, like you could even just serve the idea. Like you could be like a doctor who your Hippocratic oath you just took so seriously that it's like you have a religious devotion to it. There's a lot of possibilities, but. Level 1, you get Bless and Cure Wounds as your additional cleric spells, which means what that essentially means when we say additional cleric spells, because clerics already have access to Bless and Cure Wounds. All of these additional spells, regardless of whether or not they're originally in the cleric spell list, are always prepared automatically and don't count against the number of spells that you can normally have prepared.
Mm.
So you just get free access to all the spells that Jasper just said. And this also means that you get free access to Bless and Cure Wounds, which is great. because it frees you up to stack more to get add more spells. Third level, you get lesser restoration and spiritual weapon. Again,
so useful,
two very
spells.
Useful spells.
Yeah. This is obscene, really actually, because I'm looking through this list. Like, these are all spells that realistically, as a cleric, if you wanted to have any kind
of
healing
abilities,
you take all of these. Do you know what I mean?
Yes.
So this really does free up your spell list to then go, you know, wherever you want, which is, I think,
as a cleric myself,
nice.
Like when I'm usually like in a game, like I usually prep like a battle kit and then a town kit, like, or if we're an adventuring day out kit. And it's like both of those contain always lesser restoration and cure wounds, always. So when you,
I love that you've got like your shopping bag, and then you've got your battle bag.
So cool.
You know what I mean? For like the shopping
episode. I order these like beautiful spell books from a local creator here in Vancouver, and I have like my cleric cards for battle kit in one, and my cleric cards for my town kit in the other, and it's just like, okay, what are we doing today? What are we doing?
So awesome!
That's so good.
I love that. At fifth level, you get Beacon of Hope and Revivify. Beacon of Hope basically gives people, I think, advantage on wisdom saves and death saving throws, and they regained the maximum number of hit points available from healing. And Revivify brings
just
somebody
always
back
having
to life
access to that is just so good.
Yeah, it's so good.
Beacon of Hope as well. What a satisfying way to stop yourself from rolling like crud on a healing spell. Do you know what I mean? There's nothing worse than rolling a one and being like, oh, well, sorry, dude, I tried.
Yes.
I really did.
Then Death Ward, you get Death Ward and Guardian of Faith at seventh level. Death Ward basically is like a relentless endurance, a free relentless endurance. They just pop back up from zero hit points to one HP. It's pretty awesome. Mm. And if something would kill somebody automatically, it's just, it just doesn't happen.
That's so good.
Guardian of Faith is similar to Spirit Guardians. You summon a person, they do damage. It's great. And they basically just stand there. It's like an obstacle that just does stuff. I think they just stand
there. If they move, they move slowly. They don't move fast.
Yeah, I think it's you summon them and they're basically just a hazard. They deal 60 damage and then disappear. You can flavor that all sorts of ways. I'm thinking of like you summon a gigantic stethoscope, and every time somebody steps into the space, it's like, ah, it's so cold! And they take the damage. But anyway. And then at ninth level, you get Mass Cure Wounds, again, awesome, and Raise Dead, which is even better.
I have most of those prepared every day. With my clerics, and I am not a life cleric, so it's just like when you have those prepared every day, you're like, let's take some fun other things that I can put in here, or some more useful things based on what our party's going to be doing today, without having to pack my spell book with things that just keep my party alive, you know?
Yeah, it's look. Sometimes vanilla's popular for a reason, and the reason is because it tastes really good.
It does, and it couples well with a lot of other flavors.
Absolutely,
exactly.
No matter how your party looks, this will always
they will never say no to a life cleric.
This will always be
never
useful.
Say no to a life.
There is no scenario, no party where this isn't hella helpful.
Exactly. And having some of these spells prepared means you do like you free yourself up to get damaging spells. If you want to still be good at damaging, you can still get Guiding Bolt, which we didn't. Guiding Bolt does 4d6 radiant damage
and
at level one.
And
that's half a
every
fireball.
Level. And if you hit with it, gives advantage on the next attack. So it's like.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's so good. You crit, you can hit somebody with the equivalent of a fireball's worth of damage at level one. At range.
It's 120
this
feet
is,
on Guiding Bolt, too. It's
are really
one
good.
Of the longer range cleric spells.
What? That's what you, that's
what?
So good.
Take Spell
so
Sniper,
good.
And it's two. It's what, 240?
240 speed. 240 feet. Can you imagine? So you also, and not only do you get all those great spells, you get the bonus proficiency of being proficient with heavy armor
so
starting
you could
at level
be
one.
A tanky,
so you,
like, healer. And also be in the melee battle, too.
I feel like the way I imagine these guys is a bit like, have you seen Hurt Locker, where they have like the and they're like kind of like in the big padded things. It's like them running into the combat, touching someone, healing them, and then running out again. Like, that's kind of how I imagine.
I think this one,
cleric.
The life cleric, is actually like if the forge cleric that Jasper was talking about is like a really good like tanky cleric. The life cleric is a like nice mid ground. You know, you're balancing more of your spells and your melee as well. Whereas the one I'm going to talk about is more a primary spellcaster. So I think that's a nice smattering.
Yeah. And it's proof in the pudding again about how different these subclasses can make how you play the cleric wildly different. Yeah.
And I said that the life domain is all about healing. At level one, you get Disciple of Life, which whenever you use a spell of first level or higher to heal a creature, they also regain additional hit points equal to 2 plus the spell's level. Which means that, like, with Cure Wounds at level one, you, I think, would get, what, a minimum of 4. You restore a minimum of 4, a maximum of 11.
Which is probably half your hit points at level one, to be quite honest. Like, if not more.
That extra healing goes a long way. Like, it really goes a long way, especially in the long run. Second level, you get a different, you get your Channel Divinity option, which is Preserve Life. As an action, you basically, you emit healing energy that can restore a number of hit points equal to 5 times your cleric level. So at level 20, we're talking about 100. Choose any creatures within 30 feet of you and divide those hit points among them. This feature can restore a creature to no more than half of its hit point maximum, and you can't use this feature on an undead or a construct, but still. Okay, cool, guys. We're level 5? Great. I have 25 more hit points that I can distribute among everybody's backup.
Yeah, you get some healing. And you get some healing.
Yeah, little tip, by the way. Same thing for paladins with Lay on Hands. If you always keep like 4 or 5 points in the bank, because all you need to do is 1 hit point back to someone and then straight back up. Like, even if they're on 2 death saves or whatever the situation, they literally need 1 hit point and they're back up and running out of there. Like, it's... it really made me laugh the way you just went, and that's 100? Like, I was just like, wow, like, that even is a truly spicy amount of hit points.
I play in a 2 cleric, 1 paladin party. So, like, we've got 2 clerics and a paladin, 2 wizards, and a warlock in our party. So even though we have 2 clerics, if both the clerics go down, it's on the paladin. Like, the paladin has to bring us up. So there, you know, our paladin Callie, she always keeps some lay on hands, and she's always got Revivify in the bank to keep her stocked with diamonds. You gotta prepare for those big battles, and life clerics got it in the bank.
Mm-hmm. You can slip and hurt yourself on all these hit points. Just oozing.
Just dropping them all over the place.
6th level, folks, you get Blessed Healer. When you cast healing spells, they also, on somebody else, like a healing spell of 1st level or higher, on someone other than you, you regain hit points equal to 2 plus the spell's level.
I don't know if we've convinced you that clerics are wonderful yet, Jasper. I feel like
everybody is just getting so much HP.
I think we've recently covered quite a few classes where I feel like we could easily make the unkillable party. And I feel like the life domain cleric is coming into that. Like, between this, was it like the Totem Warrior Barbarian?
The Zealous Barbarian
that just doesn't die. I honestly think you could create a party that I just don't know what you'd throw at it. That it would just, like, it would win purely through a war of attrition. Do you know what I mean? It would just keep going. And this is it. Like, this is obscene.
That's such
a good
ability.
The primary healer just be healing itself. Like, even if you manage to hit this thing with heavy armor stood at the back. You know what I mean? It's just going to heal itself anyway, man.
I'm just imagining, like, you distributing Purell around the battlefield, and every time you give somebody some, you get an additional squirt. It's like, my hands are clean, too!
Believe in the divine ability to eradicate disease and viruses.
Yes.
Be gone, coronavirus.
I wish.
I'm a cleric of the CDC.
Yeah. That's amazing. I love it.
you reflavor it as the mask cleric.
Absolutely.
The Fauci domain or whatever is it?
Your god is Fauci.
That's amazing.
Your god is just Fauci in the sky.
You reflavor like all your healing spells to be vaccine.
I love it.
The nicer ones, the better, the higher level. Like, you pick the it's like, oh, this one's the Moderna.
Johnson, as you yell out as you heal someone.
Please get vaccinated, everybody. Please.
Please.
When you use inflict wounds, you're like Delta variant.
Oh, too close, my god. Too close.
Yeah.
Anyway,
COVID-20.
Divine strike at 8th level. Divine strike, similar to the Forge cleric, you get a melee ability at level 8. This it's basically the exact same thing, except instead of doing fire damage on a melee or on a with a weapon attack, so it actually doesn't have to be a melee weapon. It could be a ranged weapon. You can cause the attack to deal an extra 1d8 radiant damage to the target. However, I don't know if the Forge cleric gets this. Oh no, they do. Yeah. When you hit 14th level, the damage increases to 2d8.
Yes.
So again, if we're combining that with Blessed Strikes, you are now dropping an additional 3d8.
Once per turn.
You can have like a crossbow and be hitting people for 3d8 radiant damage on top of whatever the damage you're doing with the crossbow.
I mean, if you're a Forged Domain cleric and you get your hands on a flame tongue greatsword, I mean, it's
you're
over.
Done for.
Like, it's over. That's like, is that like 6d8? No,
so many.
78.
Many d8s.
Yeah. It's too many d8s.
I think
too
that many would be in the Blackwater D&D campaign. Guns are cleric weapons in our campaign, so only clerics can use firearms. So using that on with a firearm would be devastating. Mm. So good.
Mm. Oh, man.
3d8
extra damage with your gun. On top of the damage that it does.
Jeremy, just so you know, for next episode, Tovo is going to be a cleric now. He's just making the switcheroo. We'll just message after this about it. It'll be easy. Don't worry about it. It's cool.
Just a little 5-minute segment where Tovo converts.
I just get on my knees. I start praying and immediately become a cleric. My word.
And finally, we get supreme healing at 17th level, as if the healing was not already supreme. Starting at 17th level, when you would normally roll one or more dice to restore hit points with a spell, you instead use the highest number possible for each die. So you just automatically restore the maximum amount of health with whatever spell you cast. So like your cure wounds is now you could cast it at one at first level, but it's automatically doing 11 points of healing
18.
To them, plus 3 to yourself.
No more, because it's the spell's level, right? Oh, no, it's the spell's level, not your level. Apologies.
If it's your level, then that's really a joke. Can you imagine? Can you imagine 22 additional HP with every... Yeah, that's... But still, that's a very nice ability. Mm. Just very nice.
Yep.
Very nice.
Yep.
Light clerics, you gotta love them. As Emma said, you can't go wrong with a life cleric.
Everybody's best friend.
There is no campaign that would be poorly served.
Should I dive into mine? Okay, so on the opposite end of the life cleric, not necessarily as far, as the death cleric, we are going to talk about the grave cleric, the cleric's domain that is the most nearest and dearest to my heart. My sweet girl, Nepenthe, is a grave cleric. So these are clerics of gods that serve over, watching the line between life and death. So in our campaign, the Raven Queen is... Well, I mean, she's pissed off. She's not dead, but she's mad. She's not the goddess that's in charge of that anymore. There's a new goddess, Nephthysiket, who is my character's goddess. Think an Egyptian cat goddess is what we're going for with that one. Ooh. So death and afterlife are foundational parts of the universe. And to desecrate the peace of the dead is an abomination. So the dead must stay dead. So they, try and make sure that the undead don't. No undead. No, thank you. And they ease that they're in, in the background, they ease the suffering of people who are dying because their magic allows them to stave off death. There is a delay in death, but not, I like this phrase from the book, there is a delay of death, but not a denial of it, for death will eventually get its due. So grave clerics really say death comes for us all when it's time. And maybe your time is up, but maybe it's not.
It's like embracing death as part
of
the natural order.
And knowing that that is the line, that death is a hard line that should not be messed with. Mm-hmm. So at you get some extra amazing spells from the cleric list. At level 1, you get Bane and False Life already prepared. At 3rd level, you get Gentle Repose, which I really love. It's a way to stave off. So say in the middle of battle, you can't might not be able to revivify someone right away. So you can cast Gentle Repose on them, and then you essentially have 10 days to cast Revivify, not necessarily Raise Dead. So you can use a lower amount of diamonds to bring them back.
And they can't be brought back as an undead, right?
It keeps them from being zombified and all of that kind of gross stuff. So then there is Ray of Enfeeblement, which decreases strength attacks in a creature, which I think is really cool. At fifth level, you get Revivify Always Prepared, which is really nice. And also Vampiric Touch. You can heal yourself a little bit with those spells. Seventh level, you get Blight and Death Ward. As we've talked about Death Ward, I love Death Ward all the time. I cast it on one member of a party at least before every battle. And then at ninth level, you get Anti-Life Shell, which has come in handy more times than not. You just need to get everything away from you real quickly. You can drop Anti-Life Shell. Ranged attacks can go through it, but melee and people cannot, or living things cannot. And then Raise Dead as well.
Ooh, and I think Alan Cudicchio's character used Blight in like the big climactic battle of correct. The Cup and the Caterpillar.
Yeah, it was very OG.
He's a druid, but Blight is hard.
Packs a big punch. Yeah, absolutely. I love Blight as a spell. It's really, really great because it's ranged too, I think. Or is that one touch? I forget. It's touch? Okay,
I think it's
then,
touch.
Yeah. But yeah, Blight.
Wait, let me... Is it? No, it's 30 feet. It's 30 foot.
30 feet.
No, so 30 at first... Feet.
8d8.
Right? So spicy.
Oh my word. And if it's, isn't it?
It's half as much on a fail, so it's not as
Yeah,
as
but if it's, if you're fighting a plant, then it does max damage on them.
And it has disadvantage on the saving throw.
It's just wither this thing and watch it die. So at first level, you get Circle of Mortality, which is the ability to manipulate the line between life and death when you would normally roll one or more dice to restore hit points to a creature with zero hit points. Instead, you use the highest number possible for each die. So I can, you know, cast, you know, a first level healing spell into bring a creature up from zero, and they're still getting a decent amount of hit points to keep them going for the next round. And also you learn...
Again, at first level, that can bring someone back up to full hit points.
That's a baby version of what the life cleric gets at level 17. And they grab it at level 1.
And then you also learn the Spare the Dying cantrip, which doesn't count against the number of cleric cantrips you know. And you can also cast it as a bonus action and at 30 feet. So you could stabilize someone from across the battlefield as a bonus action, and it's a cantrip. So you could cast another leveled spell. So you stabilize them, and then you can go kill the big bad over there, which is great. So this is definitely a cleric. So cool. I would say that you're not going to get right in the fray. This is probably going to be a more support or healing focused cleric. But there ain't nothing wrong with that as well.
Yeah, because you don't. It's worth pointing out you don't get that heavy armor proficiency like those other domains.
Yes, that's very true. So, at first level, you also get Eyes of the Grave, so you get the ability to sense the presence of undead as an action. You can open your awareness magically to detect undead. You know the location of any undead within 60 feet that aren't behind total cover. They don't tell you anything about the creature's abilities or identity, but you can know if there is undead around. Which is really, really nice. And then, the Channel Divinity, one of my favorite. There's like three, I've got two favorite things about this class, and this is one of them. Starting at second level, you can use your Channel Divinity to mark another creature's life force for termination. You can, as an action, you can choose a creature within 30 feet, cursing it until the end of your next turn. The next time you or an ally of yours hits that creature, the creature has vulnerability to all attack damage. And it overcomes resistances.
It
overcomes resistances to everything. And it doesn't just make it like,
sweet.
And I've done some research into this one too. And apparently it doesn't just like, if something has like immunity to it, it doesn't flatten it out. It makes it vulnerability. Yes.
Wow. Whoa. Does it work with like AoE spells or save spells as well? Because it says with an attack. Does it require an attack roll, or can it work with?
I haven't
like
read into it that far. I mean, that's
spells.
How we play it in our campaign. Anytime that creature takes damage from if that's an attack or whatever, then yeah.
So that means you could hit somebody with like a if there was a plant enemy that you were facing and you had blight. You could hit them with basically a 16d8 max
next
damage.
Next time it's a fully plant based campaign. Jeremy's playing a grave cleric. He's doing it. Calling it now.
Yeah, that's it. That's my plan.
Poison ivy runs your life.
Yeah, I'm bringing out the garden shears.
Level 6, the bane of I know Tim, our DM in Blackwater D&D's campaign's existence, is one of my favorite abilities, Sentinel at Death's Door. At 6th level, you get the ability to impede death's progress. As a reaction, when you or a creature you see within 30 feet of you suffers a critical hit, you can turn that hit into a normal hit and all effects of the crit are canceled. So it's not double damage and you don't get any of those extra effects if it's a crit.
It's the best. As a DM, I already hate
but it's
this
so
ability.
Fun, Jasper.
I hate it. It's so fun. Oh my god! If that happened to me, hell yes, this is the best. But oh,
Tim's
I
just
hate
Tim's
it
just
as a
gotten
DM.
Used
like,
to be like, you know, he's like, and that's a crit, and me just being, no, it's not. And then, but you only get that equal to the number of times of your wisdom modifier, and you regain all expended uses when you finish a long rest. So.
I can just imagine being like, I crit, but I don't. Yeah. Okay, moving on. Cool.
Yeah, he stops announcing crits. He's like, oh, Emma, could you
absolutely
just cross
well,
off one of the
Sentinel? We have a running joke. Cool. We have a running joke in our campaign that I keep all of our party on 30-foot leashes, so everyone's within 30 feet of me at all times, so I can cancel, especially our wizard, like our squishier wizard. I'm like, you don't go further than 30 feet from me because I can't cancel your crits. At level 8, you get potent spell casting, so it's starting at 8th level. You can add your wisdom modifier to the damage you deal with any cleric cantrip, which is really nice. A little bit of extra kick to those.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
That's or something. That's,
it's like agonizing blast.
Yes, we
love
that.
To see it.
And then the other really cool ability, my character right now is at level 15, so I'm 2 levels away from this one, but I'm very excited. Keeper of Souls. Starting at 17th level, you can seize a trace of vitality from a parting soul and use it to heal the living. When an enemy you see dies within 60 feet of you, you or one creature of your choice that is also within 60 feet of you regains hit points equal to the number of the enemy's hit dice. So if you're facing like a level 20-ish creature, you gain that you can just take 20 hit points from them and give it to somebody else. And that is not a reaction. Like, I've looked this up. You can just, it's just a free
really
healing.
Good.
It's just a free action that you can do. And you can use this feature only if you aren't incapacitated. And once you do this, you can't do this until the start of your next turn. So that's every turn. If something dies, you can just give out free healing.
And like, imagine if it's something really big too, like something that like a hefty has like a good solid 8 or 9
Absolutely.
10 hit dice and it's just like, cool,
10 hit points to you, man. My friend, and you just, it's a free action, it's a delight. So Grave Clerics, and this one is from also from Xanathar's as well, and I love it very much. She's my Grave Cleric is my baby and I love her very much. It's very good.
Oh, I
man,
am
what a class.
Good. I'm converted, everyone.
You converted to being a cleric.
Welcome.
You joined the cleric religion.
You're
a cleric. Cleric.
There's no way that I can't play a cleric. I have to play a cleric. I have to get some of these abilities. These are ridiculous. Yeah.
You're a cleric
fun.
Domain cleric.
Yeah, I'm a cleric domain cleric. Yeah, belief in other clerics is where I draw my power.
Belief in the power of the class.
My belief in how good. And how good the class is what will power me. Wow, this has been amazing. Maybe we should just do like a little last one-liner thoughts on the clerics. There's been so much to dig into. This is probably one of my favorite deep dives we've done, I think, just because it's been a really rich conversation around clerics and I think what a versatile and badass class.
Yes.
Like, really, really cool. So why don't we go with some top-line thoughts? We'll keep the same order. Why not? I'll dive in first and then we'll let Emma finish. But I would say that it is pretty much exactly what I just said. It's bad. Badass, it's versatile. There's so many uses for this, and I'm excited to see what the rest of the subclasses throw up and how different they might end up feeling from one another. And hey, look, I just want to channel divine intervention one time. That's all I want. That's all I want in life now. Jeremy, what about you? What's your closing statement?
Easily one of the most thematically, philosophically, flavorful classes.
Flavorly.
Just rich. Flavorly rich. Very rich in flavor.
Very Flavor Flav is the cleric.
Yes. The class of Flavor Flav.
Yeah.
Flavor Flav, that is.
Famously only plays clerics.
Yes.
Maybe he's a time cleric with a big clock on his chest. I'm sorry. Again.
Yo, that's good.
There needs to be a time
There's like
cleric.
A UA one somewhere out there in the void, but yeah, it's good.
Okay, but yes, really, really great class. I think there's so much to talk about. Really powerful class. Really cool. Look, just go play a cleric. Just try it out.
Yeah.
Just try it out.
Heck yes.
Try it out. See how you like it.
Try it out.
Just give it a try.
And our wonderful guest, Emma Carlson, what is your closing statement on the cleric?
Well, if you want a class that allows you to have all of the good, crunchy stats options that you can pack into one character and balance that with an amazing ability to dive into some juicy, thematic, rich role play, and you want those two things to be able to kiss all the time, kiss. Play a cleric. Mm. Just do it, because you'll have fun and your party will love you for it.
Amazing. Ugh. So, yeah, love it. This has been fantastic. Emma, for anyone who hasn't listened to our previous episode in which you were on, why don't you go ahead and tell everyone where they can find all of your stuffs on the internet and interact and, with you and all the awesome stuff.
Well, first off, thank you so much for having me back. This has been a blast. I love hanging out with you guys. Oh my gosh, this is the best. So my name is Emma Carlson. I am the creative director over at Blackwater D&D. You can find us playing live, and we are back to our main campaign, which is amazing. So we're starting back. Tim and I are coming back from maternity leave Saturday nights, 8 p.m. Pacific Standard Time at twitch.tv/BlackwaterD&D. You can also find us on the Twitters at BlackwaterD&D, and you can also come hang out with me on my Twitter at EMM_Carlson. That's me on Twitter. Please come check out my show, and you can watch two very different clerics try and keep a party alive. It's hard. It's really hard to keep our party alive, but we're getting there. It's good.
Amazing. Well, thank you so much again for coming and bringing your insight into clerics. And please do check out our previous episode, which is all about death and D&D. It's a really, really insightful chat, and Emma just brought so much to the table. So it's a really, really worthwhile chat if you haven't listened to it already. And if this is perhaps one of your first time listening to us, do not forget to drop a review, because it really helps us in getting out there and finding new people. So put a review. Just it literally takes 2 seconds. In fact, you can do it in the time it takes me to wrap up this episode. Go on it right now. You can literally go click 5 stars and then just write something nice like, this is cool. You can also... Jeremy, what were you going to say?
I was going to say, and then listen to Outlaws and Obelisks. Go do that.
Go listen to Outlaws and Obelisks. Then head over to the Patreon and listen to our campfire chats where we dig into the most recent episodes. That's patreon.com/TBHalflings. And if that's not all of your day taken up with Three Black Halfling stuff, you could also find us on Twitter and Instagram and Facebook at TB Halflings. That is more than enough of that.
But there's one last thing.
Isn't there?
We're going to be covering the other cleric subclasses on our Patreon. You won't just be hearing the campfire chats. You'll hear the deep dives into this and all the other subclasses for the classes that we've done.
And we will attempt to keep that episode under 4 hours.
Good luck.
It'll be a struggle, but we'll talk very
fast. We'll try. We'll talk.
Listen to double speed, or whatever it is.
Yeah.
We're going full Eminem rap god on this one.
Yes, that's exactly what we're going to do. And by this point, I am sure that you finished writing a review, so that all that is left to say is... So long, Shire folk!
So long, bye. Shire folk.
That was a HeadGum Podcast.